Welcome to Breakthrough Success. I'm your host, Mark Roberti, the content marketing expert, bringing you 5 new episodes every week where I and top-level guests teach you how to take your business to the next level and achieve your breakthrough. All of us are in the process of selling. Whether we're selling products or ideas or anything else, we are all in the process of selling. And some people, they have this sketchy view of what selling is, like they don't like to be sold to. So that's why we need to learn how to sell with integrity and break through some of the sales barriers that people have set up in their minds. And that's going to be the focus of today's episode. Today's guest is a 2-time bestselling author and weekly columnist for Inc. and Forbes. His book, Same Side Selling, attracted a lot of attention from leaders in the space, including Seth Godin, who referred to the book as one of 2 intriguing books you should read on B2B consultative selling. His popular weekly podcast, Same Side Selling Podcast, is available on iTunes or wherever you go to listen to your favorite podcasts, such as maybe this one. So without any further ado, today's guest for episode 171 of the Breakthrough Success Podcast is none other than Ian Altman. Ian, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show.
Mark, thanks so much. I was always hoping I would be on episode 171, and here I am.
Ian, it is such a pleasure to have you on this episode 171. I know you're going to share a lot of great insights with us today, but I'd love to get some backstory before we go a little deeper into breaking through some of the sales barriers. So I'm wondering, why Same Side Selling? What inspired the book and the idea behind it?
Well, it's interesting. In Same Side Selling, I co-wrote it with a guy named Jack Quarles. And you could probably guess from Jack's last name, Quarles. Jack is a guy who spent 2 decades in purchasing and procurement. And we met through this board level kind of CEO networking group in the Washington, D.C. area called Cadre. And Jack came to one of these, what I call them, immersion programs that I was doing for some clients on these approaches to selling with integrity. And I thought, wow, this is really cool because Jack wants to hear how I'm teaching this stuff. Maybe he's going to use it in his business. And the reality is that Jack was thinking, man, you know, anytime we go up against one of Ian's clients in a procurement side, we tend to not be concerned as much about price. So I want to hear what he's teaching them. And after the session, Jack and I had a discussion. He said, you know, you're teaching people the same stuff I'm teaching them, which is to focus on value and results. And gee, there aren't any books that we're aware of out in the market that have the buyer and seller perspective. We put our heads together and came up with Same Side Selling to kind of overcome those adversarial traps that most people face that put buyer and seller against each other, instead of on the same side, metaphorically putting a puzzle together.
And it's interesting how, I mean, I see the adversary between the buyer and the seller. Like, I see how that perception can develop, especially people don't like being sold to in many cases, unless it's in a friendly tone and the person selling feels like that person has your best interest. So I do see how some people can view it through that lens. So it's good that we get this idea that basically we can, like the buyer and the seller to have a strong relationship, and it's not like just pitch and then disappears if the pitch doesn't go through. But one of the things that I'm wondering, and for any business, it's essential that they get customers or clients, depending on whether you're service-based or whether you're creating training courses. So how can we pursue new prospects, but at the same time serve our existing customers without getting overwhelmed? Because we don't want to be focused so much on acquisition that we forget about nurturing.
Well, so there's a few things. First, let me just comment on, you said most people don't like to be sold to. I would say that 95% of the people don't like to be sold to, and the other 5% don't like to be sold to either. So none of us likes to feel like we're being sold to. Instead, if I've got something that's an important problem I'm facing and I think you can solve it, then we have something worth talking about. So recognize that you can always show up to a potential client in one of two ways. You can either show up as somebody who's there to sell something or someone who's there to solve something. We want to make sure we always show up in the second way. So if I have existing clients and I have new clients, here's the simplest thing. Too often we think about what we want to sell instead of what we should be doing is figuring out which potential clients and which of my existing clients have symptoms that we're good at treating. So almost think of it like a medical metaphor. Look, we're good at treating certain conditions. I just want to find the people who have symptoms that might be an indicator that they have this condition that we're really good at treating. In fact, we're better at treating that than anybody else. And then as we're seeking that out, what it usually means is that you will qualify out certain opportunities earlier in the process than you may have in the past. And what happens is you're focusing on the people for whom you can have the greatest impact rather than people you just like to be able to sell to.
In addition to being able to acquire the new prospects and serving customers, I wonder if you could go a little more into detail about, without getting overwhelmed and also doing a lot of other things like content creation and other things that are essential for business.
Well, so here's the at the most basic level, what you want to think about is, everyone studies this idea of an elevator pitch. So how are they going to pitch themselves to a client? And instead, I want you to think of a concept of what I often refer to as an elevator rant. It's a term that a buddy of mine, Bob London, at Chief Listening Officers, coined. And the idea of the elevator rant is this. You get on an elevator. The doors are about to close. No one's on the elevator. Someone sticks their arm and the doors spring open and two people representing your ideal client get on the elevator with you. They spend the rest of the ride up to, let's say, the 20th floor complaining to one another about something that when you hear it, you think, man, nobody is better at solving that than we are. So the first task for any entrepreneur, anybody in business is, what does that elevator rant sound like? What are people complaining about that we're good at fixing? They might be complaining about their existing vendor. They might be complaining about something they didn't even know they could solve. But what we want to do is we always want to speak in the context of the problems we solve rather than what we do. So, for example, in the digital marketing space and in content marketing, where you are, you could say to people, oh, well, what we do is we create content marketing and digital marketing and all this kind of stuff. But the person who needs it the most doesn't even know they need it. But instead, if you said, well, our clients come to us because they're sick and tired of their competitors getting attention where they're not. Their ideal clients, when they do a search, they never find them. They find other people. And the people that can help the most don't even know they exist. Well, so you didn't say what you do. You just described the problems you're good at solving. And people say, wait, I have that second problem, which piques their interest because you might be able to solve that problem for them. Does that make sense?
Yes. And one of the things you touched on earlier is that you don't want to you want to have a narrow focus when it comes to the marketplace so that you are the specialist in a certain area instead of having too broad of an appeal where you're trying to cater to everyone and in the end getting no one. And I do want to expand on narrowing our focus. I'm wondering, how do we narrow our focus in the marketplace so we don't become the jack of all trades, but make sure it's not too narrow to the point where it's such a narrow niche that we're not able to attract people?
See, if you start thinking, and I'm glad you asked that, if you start thinking from the perspective of what problems am I good at solving, what you will realize is, look, there are certain clients that meet that profile. So, for example, I could arguably people improve their sales and marketing and the way they're going to grow their business in any industry. However, I know that I can have the greatest impact for B2B companies, specifically B2B companies that have some level of a service offering also. So that's the niche that I play in. And so the thing is that if I said, oh, I can help everybody, everyone goes, well, that's not really that specialized. But if you said, for example, oh, you know what? You know, we help digital marketing. We help on the digital marketing and content marketing side specifically for CEOs who are left-handed. Here's the funny part. You'd be thinking to yourself, well, I'm cutting out half the market. But the CEO is left-handed goes, well, we got to talk to Mark because I'm left-handed. And it's funny, it becomes kind of a self-selecting environment where people say, oh, wait a minute, that's the niche that I'm in. So, gee, I should talk to these people. And so it's not that you all of a sudden, you know, want to say, oh, well, you know, gee, we cater to, you know, we cater to, you know, one-armed pole vaulters whose right leg is shorter than their left leg. That's probably going to be a pretty narrow market. But, you know, you can start looking at, well, gee, here are the clients I've served in the past. What do they have in common? What problems were they trying to solve? And now your messaging gets laser focused on those areas. Because here's the thing, the client just starts vetting you and says, have you worked with other people like us? You want to be able to say, yeah, we have. And so getting that messaging becomes pretty important because it allows us to better focus on the right organizations. There's also some techniques that we can use to make it so that people really, we pique their interest and they want to learn more about us. And we take that elevator rant and turn it into something that we call a same side pitch to attract the ideal customer.
Now, let's say that you're someone getting started off. You haven't landed your first client yet, so you can't use the testimonials or say that you've worked with these past clients and these past industries doing this, like these activities. So what are your recommendations for someone who's trying to get their first clients or their first customers?
Well, the first thing you really have to do is it gets back to that elevator rant. If you don't know what problem you're going to be good at solving and where you're going to be focused, then your client's not going to figure it out either. And here's the thing. If you don't have the experience doing it yet, merely the fact that you identify the problem could be half of what you're looking for. In fact, I'll give you a story of one of the first clients I sold when I started a prior business. So I started a business that it grew from zero to value of over $1 billion. And the first client I was selling to was a major pharmaceutical company. And they were looking at me and a bunch of other companies that had a ton of experience getting new drugs submitted to the Food and Drug Administration. And their whole goal was, how can they speed up the review process by the FDA? Because in the pharmaceutical industry, every day that you save in time to market, they equate to $1 million. And everybody was focused on what they could do to control the FDA and help the FDA review things faster. And I went in there, and during our discussion, I said, well, so after you do all these studies, what's the process internally? I said, well, we go through this process. It takes us 18 months to get the document prepared and sent off to the FDA. And I said, okay, so do you have more control over what your own people do or what the FDA reviewers do? It was like this big epiphany. They're like, well, our own people, okay. And if we can save 15 days off your internal review, is that worth the same $1 million a day? And they said, yeah. I said, okay. So how about we take the approach to speed up your own internal review, and then if we can show that the FDA that it cut your time, maybe they'll believe it can cut their time too. And we ended up doing millions and millions of dollars with this company where we had zero experience before, but because we were thinking about what are the problems that we're going to solve for you, not so much what it is that we're going to do, but rather seeking out the problem and having that meeting of the minds around the problem we're really trying to solve, we beat out companies that were candidly way better qualified based on their experience, based on their history, than, you know, we could ever be.
And it's good that you narrow your focus to the point where people who have very specific backgrounds and very specific needs are coming to your product and service. And when you do narrow it down, you still have to have conversations with prospects, because that's going to, and even if this is just like written emails, it's still a conversation where you are, in a sense, persuading them to give your product or service a try while highlighting yourself as a clear solution to the problem that they have. And I'm wondering, how do you prepare for a conversation with a prospect? Like, do you have a format that you use for each call or script, or is the preparation different depending on the prospect?
Well, so you want to be well prepared, but I caution against a script, and here's why. Have you ever received a cold call by someone over the phone who was reading a script.
Me, not me. Like, I don't really remember that, but like, I'm sure a lot of people in the audience have at some point.
Yeah. Most of us have been on the receiving end of a phone call from somebody reading a script. And so I often ask people, how do you know? And they're like, well, you just tell they're reading a script. So if it's a script, it tends to be somebody else's words, not your own. However, you can file a structure. You can follow a structure that will help you focus on the right thing. So there's a concept that I teach called the same side quadrants. And the idea of the same side quadrants is that there's key information that we need to get in a meeting that makes it a great meeting. So most people come back from a meeting and they go, oh, the meeting was incredible. It was supposed to last only 20 minutes, and instead it lasted like an hour. And we totally clicked with the client. Man, as soon as we got together, it was just a meeting of the minds, and we've agreed the meeting went so well that we're going to meet again in 2 weeks. And that would be a great way to describe a successful interaction that was set up, let's say, on Match.com, but it's not a great way to describe a business meeting. So instead, what we want to think about is, well, what do we need to know? We need to know what's the issue the client's trying to solve first, because that's really important for us. Then we want to know what happens if they don't solve that, something I call impact. So I want to know what happens if they don't solve it, and compared to other things on their plate, how important is this, something I call importance. So the first three are issue, impact, and importance. Then we want to talk about, well, what does success look like for that client? How are we going to measure and hold ourselves accountable to delivering the results that they need? Because just because they pay us and we try doesn't mean we're successful. What does success look like? And then we also want to know who else is impacted. So we lay these out in a quadrant. So if people have a blank sheet of paper, literally draw a vertical line down the center of the page, horizontal line across the page, and it'll create four quadrants. In the upper left, we write in small letters the word issue. The upper right, impact. And about two-thirds of the way down in that upper right box, the word importance. The lower left, results, and the lower right, others impacted. And this becomes our template for taking notes. It's funny, for years, people asked me, well, can you produce these like in a journal? And I said, it's just drawing two lines. And now we have people who go on Amazon and buy this thing we call the same side quadrant journals. But it took me getting, you know, kicked in the head for 2 years to finally produce these journals. But the idea is that if you focus on that information, you'll know instantly which opportunities are real and which ones aren't. And you'll be asking questions of the client that are the things that are important to them, not just the things that are important to you as a seller.
And when you are on that call and you are engaging with the prospect, the relationship is going to change. And it can change based on three possible responses where the prospect says yes to your services. Then like the change there is obvious, where you're now serving that prospect who is now a client, trying to give them the best result. Then you have someone who can say like maybe, or I'll get back to you. Then there's follow up. But there are some prospects who may just say no on the spot. And they say like, no, I'm not interested in your services or something like that. So what's your approach for prospects who say no? Do you have a plan to engage with them and possibly turn that no into a yes? Or do you respect their wishes and engagement ceases?
Well, first, what I would argue is that if the best answer in a selling situation is yes, the worst answer you can get is actually maybe, because maybe is usually a veiled no. So the thing is that in this context, what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a traditional adversarial position. You're there in the beauty pageant showing your wares and you're seeking their approval. And what I want your audience to think about instead is, here are the problems I'm good at solving. I want to figure out if this client has a problem that we're good at fixing that they feel is worth solving, because I don't want to waste my time coming up with a solution for you to a problem that you don't think is worth solving. So instead of feeling a sense of rejection, instead you're putting your head together with them. So the two of you are putting your heads together saying, look, is this something worth solving? And do you feel confident that we can help you get there? And what that means is that you walk into the meeting and the first thing you do is you say, look, just because we've designed something to help other organizations and organizations like yours doesn't mean it's going to be a good fit for you. So I want to learn more about your situation to see whether or not you have something that we can solve, and candidly, whether or not it's even worth it to you to solve that. And if it looks like we have something worth pursuing, then we can determine whether or not you'd like our help. And if there's something not worth pursuing or something that we're not good at solving, I'll point you in the right direction to someone else. That sound okay? And now it puts us on the same side of the table trying to solve that puzzle rather than let me present my stuff and seek your approval. Can you see how that'll change the dynamic a little bit?
Yes, I can. Where it's not like you get a no and you just walk away. It's you get a no, you see what problems they want fixed that maybe they don't see in you or you know you can't do, and you refer them to someone who can solve those problems.
And keep in mind, no might just mean no, not today. It's not a good fit today. But if I talk and I'm effectively communicating about the things that we're good at solving, then when that client 2 weeks later encounters that same problem, they say, hey, wait a minute. Mark said he solves this problem. We should get back on the horn with Mark. And you know what? Last time we told him we didn't have a good fit, he didn't sit around forever like an old piece of luggage we can't get rid of. Man, he was really respectful and worked with us and said, you know, it sounds like you're in pretty good shape. You probably don't need our help right now. So I feel pretty comfortable because Mark's not going to waste our time. Let's get him back in here and have a discussion and see if he can help us with this other thing. And once you are putting your client's results ahead of your own sales objective, then that becomes obvious to them. And people are thinking, man, I would love to do business with these people. I wonder where we can find a good fit to do business with them. And that's the difference between if you're perceived as someone who's there to solve rather than to. And the way you close when you get to that point where you're having this conversation about solving, not selling, is you talk to the client, you say, oh, so here's that issue you're trying to solve. Okay, what happens if you don't solve it? And they explain to you, like, the world comes to an end if they don't solve that. Okay, and what does success look like? I mean, what would make this high five worthy? And we have a discussion about that. And then we just look at them and say, huh, would you like our help? That's what the sale becomes. Because once you've helped them identify what the problem is, now it's impacting their organization. And once you have a discussion about what success looks like, that candidly, no one else is asking, then all of a sudden the client's like, well, yeah, I have this problem. It's really a big deal. And the outcome looks pretty great. They're thinking to themselves, man, I wonder what we do next. Hey, would you like our help? And they go, yeah. And it's just a much softer way to do business.
And it's interesting how you mentioned to put the client's results ahead of your sales objectives, ahead of the results that you want to achieve. And I think that's a really great approach, as you mentioned, for attracting clients and serving them very well. But I do know that there are people who do care about their results. Even the people who care about their clients' results, they're still looking at their results as well, making sure that they're still moving forward as well. And I'm wondering, what do you believe holds most people back from achieving their ideal sales results, whether it's number of prospects or their ability to better serve their existing ones?
In many cases, it's that if I ask somebody, well, what are the problems you're really good at solving for your clients? They look back with a blank stare because they don't know, which means if you don't know, what's the chance your client knows? So that becomes a challenge. At that point, you're just, you know, you're a hammer in search of a nail. That's pretty pathetic. But instead, you want to be the person who says, oh, yeah, you know, so people come to me when they're trying to build stuff and they can't get two pieces of wood to stay together. And so now all of a sudden we have something worth discussing, as opposed to the other way, we're just trying to peddle our stuff. So the biggest challenge is that people don't know what symptoms they're looking for because they haven't thought about it that way. And then what happens is because of that, they keep, in essence, their approach is, hey, do you want to buy my thing? Hey, do you want to buy my thing? Hey, do you want to buy my thing? No one sees them as someone who's there to solve. They just see them as someone who's trying to push something. And none of us likes to feel like we're being sold to. But imagine if instead, if someone said, well, so if you know somebody who's facing one of these two or three problems, that's the kind of stuff our clients come to us to address. But I don't know if you or anyone else that you know might be having that issue. And then people say, yeah, you know what? I got a buddy who has that issue. And now you got a warm intro. Because You're just saying, look, it's possible that this is of no value to you, and it's possible it could be valuable, and I'm just trying to figure out which one it is. And that's totally okay. Instead of, when we talk about the results, here's what I want you to recognize, is that if you sell somebody something and they don't get the results they were looking for, do you think you're going to get repeat and referral business? And the answer is no, you're not. But if they get the results they were hoping for, then all of a sudden they're going to say, wow, these guys are great. I wonder if I can do more business with them. I wonder if there are other people I know who have the same sort of problems. You'll get repeat and referral business. So the notion of, I'm not suggesting that when it comes to results that you should sacrifice profit or things like that. Quite the contrary. What I'm saying is that if you focus on the results that are important to the client, they won't care so much about price. Because here's the thing to consider. If you're buying something and you don't get the results you're looking for, how much less would you have to pay for it to be a good deal? So if you're buying something and you're not getting the results that you need, how much less would you have to pay than something else for it to be a good deal, but you don't get the results you need? And the answer is, it doesn't matter what it costs. If you don't get the results, it wasn't a good deal.
I really like this results-oriented approach, and you do bring up a good imagery where if someone's asking you, for instance, like what are some of the problems that you're solving, and if you give them that blank stare, that alone can explain why people who are trying to get prospects and customers aren't able to get those conversions, aren't able to get clients who they can bring to the next level. So for all the listeners, if you have a product or a service, be able to answer that question if someone ever asks you, what are the problems that you solve? And one of the things that I want to bring up is we all face certain challenges throughout our journeys. And with that in mind, Ian, I'm wondering if you could share with us one big challenge you faced on your journey of making sales and helping others to turn prospects into clients. So what was one of the big challenges you faced along that journey and a powerful lesson you learned during that challenge?
Well, you know, there's a number of them, and we've written about a lot of them. Let me give you one that may not even be in the book. Or it may be, but it's been a little while. And so we had a client of ours or a prospect who was a major telecommunications company. And they came to one of my guys and said, hey, we're interested in the software you guys have. And, you know, gee, we'd love for you to come out and meet with this person who's in charge of all marketing and communication for this multi-billion-dollar company. I saw this going on and said, you know what, gee, I'm going to go out for this meeting. And so we get out there and my rep, Steve, is talking to the client. The client was asking a bunch of questions and I was letting Steve run the meeting. And the client said, well, could it do this? And Steve says, yeah, it could do that. Okay. And what about this? Yeah, it could do that. And she keeps asking these questions and Steve keeps saying, yeah, it could do that. And I'm realizing based on what she's looking for that our product probably isn't the right fit for what they're trying to do. And keep in mind, this was about a $75,000 deal that we were working on. And so Steve had said, look, they've said that they don't know if they have budget for this, but they're going to try and work on it. And so all of a sudden I interjected and I said to this woman, Mary, I said, Mary, you asked this question, can it do it? And Steve said, yes, yes, this question, yes, yes, yes. We can, it can do all these things. But my concern is that in doing all those things, we're going to have to customize to the point that it may not be upgradable for you. And I want to learn more about what you're trying to do because it may not be the right fit for you. And I want to make sure I point you in the right direction. So keep in mind, I'm putting a $75,000 sale at risk by doing this because I'm bringing up an objection the client hasn't thought of, which most people traditionally in sales would say you should never do. And so she described what she was doing, what she was trying to accomplish. And I said, yeah, okay, that's, I stand by my original statement. I don't think that this product is the right fit, but there are some ways we could do it. And she looked at me and she said, so have you guys done something just like this for someone else? I said, we've done similar things for manufacturing companies, for financial services companies, but not exactly like you're looking for in your space. She said, you know, I'm glad you said that, because everyone else, when I ask that question, says they've done it. But I've been in this field for 20 years. And if someone had done it, I would know about it. So what would it take to build that? And off the top of my head, I was thinking about it. And I said, you know, just building a prototype of something like that is going to be at least $500,000. To build a full production system is probably going to cost you $3 or $4 million to build a system this complex and robust. And it's going to cost you about $1 million a year just to maintain it. You know, you tell me, is it even worth doing? And she says, are you kidding? She says, this problem costs us in fines each year $15 to $20 million. How soon can you guys start? So, and we end up doing tens of millions of dollars with this client. And the important thing is that what I did is very simple. I just focused on what their needs were and what was the best thing for them, not just what do we have in the bag to sell. And because we built that trust, and because we were transparent about what we could do and what we couldn't do, what we had done and what we hadn't done, she felt more comfortable with us taking on this project. And it became long-term a really valuable account for us that was a great reference for many years, all because we walked away from, or were willing to walk away from, a $75,000 sale that turned into over $15 million in business.
Ian, that is a very valuable story. And it's interesting how, even though you could have possibly gotten this prospect into a client without making that, basically stating an objection, you stated the objection, you were very honest, and that helped in a different way to get this prospect into a high-paying client for your services. So I do find that story very interesting. And there are a lot of stories in your book. And with that in mind, I'm wondering if you could share with us three great books that you believe will have a positive impact on us.
So one of them is my buddy Phil Jones' book called Exactly What to Say. And Exactly What to Say is just what it sounds like. Phil's got about, I think it's 21 different little phrases or ideas. When you get stuck in a sales conversation, you can read the book in about 30 minutes. And it's one of those things that a lot of my clients have is like just a quick reference to come up with things. So for example, you get the client who says, well, yeah, I've already got somebody else helping me in that area. So one of the phrases that Phil has in his book is, you would say something like, so how much do you know about the difference between how they approach problems like this and how we approach those? So how much do you know about is one of the exactly what to say phrases that opens the door to a conversation. The other book is by another friend of mine, Joey Coleman, called Never Lose a Customer Again, which is a Wall Street Journal bestseller and kind of the definitive, I don't know how many case studies it has in there, 40 or 50 case studies on things you can do without spending a bunch of money that create those lifelong customers who become raving fans. And really just, you know, he's a great resource for that. And then the another new release is by Neen James called Attention Pays. And it's all about how do you get out of the way of in this distracted world and instead focus on those areas where your attention will really pay off with clients, with employees, and at a personal level.
Ian, thank you for sharing those great book recommendations. Those will all be at the show notes, markgaberti.com/E171. And if you guys want a content marketing book that will teach you how to create, promote, and optimize your content for growth and revenue, you can grab your copy of Content Marketing Secrets over at markgaberti.com/book. And before we wrap up this episode, Ian, I've asked you several questions throughout our time together, but what do you believe is one question we need to be asking ourselves more often?
The biggest question people need to ask themselves is this client having a problem that's worth solving and that we're the best people at solving it? And if the answer is no, then move on. And it's the hardest thing because people get focused on trying to make a sale instead of thinking, do they have a problem worth solving and are we the best people to solve it? And if you do that, you'll focus on the people for whom you can have the greatest impact and you'll discover an approach to selling that everybody can embrace, even your customer.
Ian, thank you for sharing that great question and all of your insights throughout our time together. And Breakthrough Success listeners, if you guys want to learn more about Ian and see him online, you can head over to ianaltman.com. Again, all these links will be in the show notes. There's also the Same Side Selling Academy Facebook group, which is filled with people who want to sell with integrity, and they share a lot of great insights with each other in that group. And also, don't forget to get Ian's book, Same Side Selling, which is on Amazon and other places. Ian, again, I can't thank you enough for all the great insights you shared with us today. It was such a pleasure to have you on Breakthrough Success.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Mark.
How does over 100 retweets per day sound to you? My free ebook, 27 Ways to Get More Retweets on Twitter, has you covered. I use the methods within this ebook to get over 10,000 retweets every single quarter. To learn more and get access to this free resource, visit markgoberti.com/retweets.